There's been a spike in anti-gay attacks in New York, in the New York area recently, and in some quarters of American political life, a rise of homophobic rhetoric. On today's First Backstory, we'll take a look at different kind of homophobia, the ex-gay movement. It's a collection of groups which claim to be able to cure homosexuality through religion, therapy, or a combination of the two. We're joined now by Peterson Toscano, a performer and educator. He's with the website Beyond Ex-Gay, and by Dr. William Myers, a clinical professor in the Department of Psychiatry at Duke University. Welcome to our show.
Thank you very much. It's so nice to be here.
William, before we get started, let's make something clear. Haven't most of the so-called therapies and theories used by these ex-gay groups that we'll be discussing have been extensively discredited by mainstream psychology?
That's exactly right. In 1973, homosexuality was deleted from the DSM, the so-called Bible of mental health organizations. Yet in spite of that, some mental health organizations and professionals went on to offer treatment. But every year, increasingly, one professional mental health organization after another both discredits these kinds of therapies as well as advises their practitioners that it borders on being ineffective practice and downright harmful to offer these kinds of therapies to people.
Well, there are a number of psychotherapists, like a group called NARTH, that still push these ideas. Are they ignoring the DSM's take on homosexuality?
Well, I think, first of all, to say that they are curing something that is not identified as a problem, I think in and of itself would say that they are ignoring it. Many of the people who are offering these kinds of therapies are themselves not trained mental health professionals and not licensed, and often have a very strong religious orientation.
Although sexual identity in some people is fluid, is any mainstream psychologist today going to claim that someone can just switch their sexuality?
Well, you know, over the years, many people have made such claims. And I think what we've discovered as we've gone back and we've looked at what the data has shown is that either the claims that were made were completely biased, and sometimes biased to the person doing the reporting, who believed because somebody might have had a short-term appearance of making a change, then it would be reported as a change, or what would happen is there were sometimes outright fraud in terms of what was being reported. I think in careful observation of study after study after study, what's found is that people who claim to have conversion experiences almost uniformly wind up, if in fact they wind up being their authentic self, discover that their true feelings have not in fact changed.
Peterson, do we know how many people who are involved in these ex-gay programs and so-called treatments at any given time?
No, it's almost impossible to tell because in addition to these established public programs, this happens a lot under the radar through many churches. Even in New York City, at any given time, there can be people receiving pastoral counseling where they take some refried Freud mixed together with the Bible and some 12 steps to try to change someone from gay to straight.
Now, this is not just evangelical Christians. We're talking about any number of different religions, including a Jewish organization of ex-gays.
That's right. And the message is that there's something morally wrong with being gay and even maybe spiritually damaging, and that it's much preferable and valuable to be straight. And this gets reinforced in families and on jobs and all sorts of places so that a person can feel very vulnerable about their sexuality and may desire to change and may desperately seek a cure.
But and any number of religious groups out there who are saying, like Exodus International, one of the first groups to promote the ideas that gays and lesbians could change, says on its website they can do it through the power of Jesus Christ.
I know over 1,500 people who have been through a variety of religious-based and secular-based ex-gay programs. And what they experienced, the change they had, was not what they signed up for. They got depressed, confused, suicidal. It's a really horrible harvest that they reap as a result of these therapies.
William, what about the secular organizations? We mentioned NARTH. There are others. Do they have, are they drawing upon older psychological ideas? I mean, are they drawing upon Freud, for example, the old idea of the overbearing mother and distant father equaling homosexual?
Well, I think, first of all, it should be noted that Freud himself had a much more moderate view, and it was really when a lot of his ideas were adopted by American psychoanalysts that they became much more conservative and especially wound up pathologizing in the very way that you're talking about the close-binding mother, the distant father, and so forth. And I would also mention, by the way, that the founders of Exodus International, the organization that you mentioned, were two men who wound up, in fact, falling in love with each other and had a lifelong relationship. And I think, again, you know, this is what is seen time and time again. People, they're vulnerable. They come into looking for some help and for some guidance, and especially if they are young people who are struggling with their identity, if they are socially isolated people who are looking for some place to which they can belong, I think these are the organizations that can have the most damaging effect by encouraging somebody, even if it's not willful, to wind up feeling more ashamed of their feelings and to wind up feeling as though they're defective.
My guests are Dr. William Myers, a clinical professor in the Department of Psychiatry at Duke University, and Peterson Toscano, who is with the website Beyond X Gay. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Peterson, didn't you go through this form of therapy when you were younger?
Yeah, starting at the age of 17, I spent 17 years and over $30,000 on three continents trying to de-gay myself, 10 of those years in New York City.
What led you to these organizations? Was it your decision or were you pushed into it?
Well, it was my decision, but I definitely was coerced by circumstances. And it wasn't just being bullied for being gay, but seeing that straight people were so often rewarded for being straight while gays were punished for being gay. It was also the time of the HIV crisis when it wasn't called that. It was called GRID, the gay-related immune deficiency, or just the gay cancer. And you get these messages piled on top of each other and put them together, plus religious messages, and I concluded that I would be far more valuable as a straight person.
So what kinds of therapies, or should we call them therapies, were you subjected to?
A lot of it was religious-based to begin with, prayer, Bible study, attending church. There was a lot of counseling, talking, listening to testimonies. And then things got a little bit more severely odd when I got involved with Life Ministries, which was a group that was running at the time in New York. And there they actually practiced exorcisms, where they tried to cast out evil spirits of homosexuality and laying on of hands and prophecy and things like that. So there was a mixture often with these extreme religious practices in some of the groups mixed in with that psychology that Dr. Myers was talking about, where they take some of Freud's ideas and misshape them to their own ends.
Were you feeling at different times like it was working?
I desperately wanted to believe it was working, and so I looked for any sort of outward sign of that. And they were encouraging many of us to marry at that time, and various people were getting married. So if I noticed a woman on the street, I thought, oh, see, look, it's happening. My heterosexuality is being kick-started. And, of course, it was just really admiring her shoes.
Well, you could have been attracted to women and men. Sexuality can be on a spectrum, can't it? And it doesn't. So that probably leads to more confusion here. Some people might find it a little easier to respond to this kind of therapy than others.
Similarly, people's libidos are different. So some people may not change their attractions, but they just may not be having gay sex because they're not interested in sex or because they suppress their sexuality so much. And that could be seen as success because you don't have desire or you're not expressing it.
William, we often hear from people who like the politicians who rail against homosexuality that this is really a matter of lifestyle.
Well, and I think what you're talking about is that for many people, this is a moral issue. And if one thinks that this is something that's morally suspect, then one has a certain position. And that, you know, we all have moral positions, and I'm not going to say what anybody else's position should be. But I think when someone is a clinician, what is required is something quite different, you know, which I think brings to us the question of what does someone need who is seeking counseling? And what they need is a place that feels safe, to be able to talk with somebody who is not biased, and that allows someone's story to unfold in a way that allows that person to become their authentic self. And I think, you know, what you were talking about before is that, you know, perhaps there's at least some bisexuality in every one of us, but if the therapist is quietly shaming the person for any same-sex attraction while lauding that person for any other sex attraction, then I think, again, especially in vulnerable individuals, they will wind up producing for the therapist, at least for the duration of the therapy, what it is that they feel that the therapist will reward them for.
I was told by a gay acquaintance that when he was in therapy, the therapist knew that he was gay. But any time he mentioned finding any woman attractive, the therapist would say, oh, let's stop there and examine what's going on here. And it was quite apparent to him that the therapist was trying to get him in touch with his heterosexual side. And this was way after 1973. So,
oh, yes.
Peterson was talking about the religious therapies. What are some of the ways that traditional psychotherapists would try to change people?
Well, I think in just, you know, the ways that you're talking about, which is, you know, the idea of rewarding certain feelings and behaviors, just as Peterson was saying, sometimes people would be encouraged to date and to have sexual partners, even heterosexual partners, even if they were at the time married, with the idea that anything that was heterosexual was superior. And again, unfortunately, they would sometimes find compliant patients, but this would only wind up confusing people and make them feel like they were failures and increase their sense of shame and sense of defectiveness.
NARTH, the group I mentioned earlier, says on its website that their therapists honor clients' self-determination and that clients choose their own goals while therapists avoid imposing an agenda. What's wrong with that when you're talking about sexuality?
Well, if that were only true, I think that would be wonderful. But I think one need only examine the history of organizations like NARTH to find that they are anything but objective. One can see, for example, somebody who was a prominent member of their board, George Reekers. Many of us remember not too long ago, although he was the person that Florida spent a great amount of money for his putting forth scientific testimony about why gays and lesbians should not be adoptive parents. He was the one who was discovered having hired somebody from Rent Boy to carry his luggage and so forth. And so often what you find are the people who are most outspoken of what can only be objectively described as an anti-homosexual bias are people who are struggling with or who are secretly having homosexual feelings and experiences.
Now, Peterson, you mentioned that it costs you a lot of money to pursue these therapies. Do you see these therapies as being driven by sincere beliefs, or do you see the profit motive as being part of this?
I think definitely both. I mean, and some people do offer their treatments for free, but they do get something out of it. They get to control somebody's life. They get the opportunity sometimes to speak publicly and on television and all about what they do. Some people, this is their business, this is their livelihood, and as a result, they're not always willing to look at the potential harm that is coming to their clients. And instead, they'll just stick with people who claim their successes, and any of us who are survivors of their treatments who raise an objection and share some of our story, they don't want to hear it because they have too much to lose because this is their career.
Is your website, the website that you work with, Beyond X Gay, a place where people who you you just described as survivors of these ex-gay treatments go to talk about their feelings?
That's right. We have this on the site itself, narratives of multiple survivors. We have articles, artwork. We work with Michael Bussey as well, who's one of the original founders of Exodus that was referenced earlier, who has since come out with a public apology, apologizing for his role in providing and promoting these therapies.
Although Exodus still survives, doesn't it?
It does still survive. But as one of the founders, he felt it was important to voice his apology, along with Darlene Bogle and Jeremy Marks, who is in the UK. So at our site, we provide resources for people who are survivors to hear other people's stories, to hear ways of recovering from the treatments that we got. And we work with therapists to come up with best practices and to help train LGBT-affirming therapists of how to work with people who've been through these treatments.
And you're saying that there's psychological damage as a result of these treatments?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, one of the real issues is this depression and this confusion, a certain malaise that happens with the piling up of shame and fear that gets mixed together along with these toxic messages about our own sexuality. It's pretty traumatic, the sort of harm that comes to many of us.
Dr. Myers, do you treat patients who've been through this kind of treatment?
I don't have patients like that in my practice, but I have met with and spoken with any number. One man in particular is 81 years old, and I met him shortly after a presentation that I made. And he became something of a mentor to me and described to me year after year after year of treatment that he had and how damaged he felt he was by this. Even now, many years later, he believes that it was this kind of treatment that seemed to keep holding out hope for him to change and left him with a sense of, again, being defective because change was not forthcoming.
Yeah.
And this was quite a lesson and experience for me to talk with him.
Well, when a politician in New York State made certain remarks about homosexuality, he was roundly criticized. But in other parts of the world, the response might have been quite different. In Uganda, for example, the anti-gay bill, if it's ever enacted, could lead to the death penalty.
And that was a bill that was very much encouraged by ex-gay leaders from the United States who went over there and shared about these therapies, saying that, hey, these therapies can cure people, so why should gay people be protected?
I want to thank the two of you for being with us today. Peterson Toscano is a performer and an educator with the website Beyond Ex-Gay. And Dr. William Myers is a clinical professor in the Department of Psychiatry at Duke University.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on.